Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another day of polished and professional broadcasting, starting here at Faith Radio immediately following my show. Bill Arnold here. So glad you joined us today. It is 4 minutes after the hour. What a nice way to get your day started. Let's start off with a little bit of Bible brush up. Here's a pop question. Rebecca, how many people were on the ark? You should know this
Noah,
one.
Noah, Noah's wife, their three sons, there was eight.
Yeah, exactly. Eight is the number. Now, could you imagine eight family members in a minivan for a year? The story would go something
Who's
like this.
Family?
And then there were seven. And then there were six. You know, I think there was really 10 people on the ark, but no one talks about the two janitors on the ark whose names were Gus and Rusty.
Is that that new version of the Bible?
I think so. I'm trying to do some homework.
I'm
trying to dig into the homework. And so here's another question. What about the New Jerusalem? When you hear that expression, does that resonate with you right away? I mean, when you think about hearing the words New Jerusalem, does that excite you?
I think so. Because, I automatically make the connection with our eternal home, like the safe and promised land.
You are smart.
But it's...
you are smart. I cannot stump you ever. Okay, in the revelation given to the Apostle John by the Lord Jesus, the New Jerusalem is the perfect place on earth where all God's people will live eternally, enjoying his glorious presence and worshiping him when he returns to make all things new.
And isn't that beautiful?
Oh,
I love it.
Awesome is that.
Especially if you kind of look around and you see, well, there's a lot of things that aren't ideal in my life or in the world around me. I'm looking forward. There's hope ahead.
Well, I don't know what world you live in.
Oh.
Certainly not mine.
But if you Maybe I just need to clean the windows.
That's right. If you want to read more about the New Jerusalem, that is in Revelations 21 and 22. All right. What about the walls of Jericho? The walls of Jericho. That was a major city stronghold in Canaan. It was the first place, fortified place to fall to Israel. God achieved victory for his people by causing the walls to fall down.
The walls came a tumbling down.
Is that a song?
It is now.
Please don't sing it.
I'm not gonna.
If you want to learn more about that, you can go to Joshua 5 to do that. That's where you can learn about that. So I was just looking at the news this morning, and Elon Musk, the guy who came up with that very cool car, the Tesla, is also wanting to do space tourism next year. Elon Musk wants to take common folk to the moon. I will take a big pass on that. My luck, I would end up in a back middle seat and have to share an armrest with some guy. I would be miserable. Plus, my trip to the moon would probably include a stop at Chicago's O'Hare. And those stops almost never go as smoothly as I like. So I would pass on the trip to the moon. And plus, it's like $200,000. And you got to put your money down up front. And
I was saving that for something else.
Really? I would not get my money back, and I would be miserable. And I don't know how much Dramamine I would have to take to go to the moon. But let's just say it would need to be the size of a hockey puck. Starter, just for starters. All right. We've got a great show today, and I'm looking over the guests, and we've got Garrett Kell. He's a columnist at Desiring God, and he says it's a wonderful time to be a Christian, 5 reasons for optimism in America. He's the lead pastor at Delray Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia. And shortly after that, I'm bringing on Todd Mulliken. He's a therapist, a counselor, a speaker. He's going to talk a little bit as we're getting out of seasonal affective disorder, because, you know, we've got daylight savings time. Is it going on or coming off this weekend or in a couple weeks? It's like March
11th. It's getting ready to start.
Yep. Yeah. So spring ahead. That's what we're going to do. And also, we're going to talk about 3 steps to quiet fear. And a little bit later on in the program, we're also going to be talking to you cannot witness to your neighbor if you're afraid of them. Okay. So we're going to tie this all together today. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us today. Bill Arnold in studio. I will be right back. Good morning, everyone. 9 minutes, well, 10 minutes after the hour now. I should look at the clock more regularly. Bill Arnold here. We're talking this morning to Garrett Kell. He's the pastor of Delray Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia, which so he's an hour ahead of us, so one additional hour ahead, so he should be 1 hour sharper than us, which I always count on anyway. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Are you a coffee person?
Yes, sir. I've already had one cup.
Awesome.
Well, ready to go.
You wrote an article for Desiring God that said, "It's a wonderful time to be a Christian. 5 reasons for optimism in America." That got me excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a day, I mean, obviously we can look around and find a bazillion reasons why it's a hard time to be a Christian or to be anybody right now. I mean, it's difficult days, but I think when you read through the Bible, we have many, many reasons to hope because of what Christ has done and is doing and will do.
And this is coming from a guy who pastors a church who's married with, what, 5 kids?
5 kids, yep.
Yeah, so you're a busy guy, and yet you still see things in an optimistic light, so I'm impressed. All right, one of the things you said is people are intrigued by real Christians. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the term Christian and even evangelical Christian has certainly been tossed around a lot in the past months and years and tied to lots of different things. And what I'm saying is that when people get around somebody who's really been born again, who's had an encounter with Jesus that has caused them to renounce everything in this life and to follow him, they should see Christ's likeness in that person, and I think it's at least intriguing. I'm not saying everybody's going to like Christians, but I'm saying that there should be something that marks us in regards to humility and gentleness and love and compassion that Christ has shown us that should radiate through people and at least be intriguing in a way that would be different than what they might be expecting from a Christian.
You mentioned that if Christians will engage their neighbors with courageous, humble, honest, servant-hearted love, people will be pleasantly surprised. I was willing to be that way towards my neighbor until he put a passcode on his Wi-Fi. Now I'm not so I'm not so nice to him.
Well, you know, Lord will give grace in the midst of all that. You know, I mean, I think obviously we're going to live around sinners, and you know what, our neighbors are living next to a sinner as well. We're not perfect, so I think that what we want to do is we want to try to represent Christ wherever he's placed us, and God uses that to open doors to the gospel.
Mm-hmm. One of the other points you made, Garrett, was Christians have the answer for racial reconciliation, but I would also say Christians have the answer for reconciliation.
Yeah, most certainly. You know, and I keyed in on racial reconciliation because this is something that our church thinks a lot about. We're growing in diversity, and we're trying to navigate a lot of difficult waters and conversations, so that's on the forefront. But I think you're right. That's what really, in one sense, you can summarize the whole message of the Bible is that God is reconciling sinners to himself and then sinners to one another. Mm-hmm. And this is the good news of Christ. That's what he's done. He's come to break down walls and divisions of all sorts and to bring peace in a way that the world really has no answer for.
Mm-hmm. Part of the work is understanding someone's culture and understanding, you know, who they are and where they've come from. And that takes a lot of work. And I have a hard enough time seeing the friends I already have, let alone making some of the new ones. So it does take some effort to get out of your little, what is it called, comfort zone, to start reaching out to people who maybe are not like you and have different traditions and customs. And so it takes a lot of work, and we're tired, right?
I mean, it's not easy work, and you know, I mean, but I think the work is worth it, because when you see people, like, so on Sunday morning, if you were to visit our church and you look around, you would say these people have absolutely no reason to hang out other than Christ, and that makes him look all the more glorious. So, it's worth the work, but it is not easy work. I mean, I have one friend who's we've been navigating these waters for a while, and we've had to say I'm sorry 100 times in our relationship, just trying to understand each other and press through, but it's worth it because we've grown deeper in love and it radiates the gospel, I think.
So is it our job to be doing all the reaching out to do racial reconciliation, or are there people unlike us who come to us saying, I need to ask for your forgiveness? How does all this work? I'm just curious about your perspective on this.
Every relationship's different, right? So I think it's really difficult to put everybody in one category and say it should always look like this. In my mind, we should mimic Jesus, and he's the pursuing one all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that love, as with any kind of relationship, whether it be with a spouse, with a friend, with whomever, I think it's good to initiate and to say, hey, listen, there's been a lot of talk about just division and racial stuff. I just like to learn kind of what's it been like for you. Can you share your story with me and just begin the conversation there? Because the goal really is love your neighbor as yourself, and part of that is learning who your neighbor is and their experiences. Because not every white person, black person, Asian, Hispanic has the same story. So I think we want to learn people individually.
Yeah, Garrett, that is going to stick in my brain, that Jesus is the pursuing one. That's going to stick, mm-hmm. which is impressive that is going to stick, because you should have seen my SAT scores. They were very, very low.
Mine's low too, buddy. I don't know how I'm doing anything. Yeah.
All right, it's 15 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break. Lots more with Garrett Kell, pastor from Delray Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia. Thanks for being with us this morning. I'll be right back. Minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here. I'm talking to Garrett Kell. He is the lead pastor at Delray Baptist Church, which is just a cool name. Cool name, Delray. Delray Baptist. That's where I'm at.
Means of the King.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like the name of a cool convertible. What, you driving a new Delray? Dang, that's nice. Nice. All right, we're talking about, what are we talking about? We're talking about... let's see here. In specific, it's just a wonderful time to be a Christian, but I was trying to figure out where my next point was, and that is God has brought unreached peoples to us. So he's actually just let people come to us. So what are we going to do once they're here?
Yeah, brother. I mean, I think it's remarkable when we look in history. History is filled with Christians, at least from America and other places too. I'm thinking about America. This is our context. That we have been praying and raising money and trying to send workers to get the good news of Jesus to people who have not heard. And in his mysterious providence, God has opened the door for, millions of people to be in in the United States of America who wouldn't normally call this home. And many of them come from places where the gospel is just not proclaimed.
Mm-hmm. So when... go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think that's a stewardship. Right, I mean, certain governments are going to do what governments are going to do in regards to issues with immigration and all that kind of. I mean, Christians, we should pray for our leaders to have wisdom, but we have a responsibility, a stewardship. I think that's unique to look who has God brought around us, and I mean, your city is much like our city, where mm-hmm. there's. I mean, this is the case for you. I know in our, this is where we live. 190 out of 196 of the nations are represented in our backyard. And many of them are people who come from countries where they're just not hearing the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, somebody delivered a pizza to our house and got into a conversation with her, asked her where she was from. She was real hesitant to tell me, but she ended up telling me she was from Afghanistan. And I said, well, hey, I just want you to know that our church regularly prays for your country.
Mm-hmm.
We know there's been a lot of really hard things going on. And she brightened up. She said, you're a Christian? You pray for me? I was like, yeah. This kind of goes back to the first thing we were talking about. Like, she just assumed Christians hated her. And it really opened a door for a gospel conversation. And you just never know what God might do.
That's really interesting. What kind of pizza was it?
Paisanos. It was excellent.
Oh, nice, nice. No, it's true. I mean, just a very simple conversation was opening a door, and then you were able to share the gospel in a little small way. Okay, I think that's really exciting, because we are in position, as you say in your article, to fulfill the Great Commission. And here God has brought all these people right in our own backyard. What are we doing about it?
Yeah, and I think every church needs to think about that. Not every church is in a place where it's as diverse. But for us, I mean, it's very diverse. Same for yours. So we have some church members who are moving into neighborhoods where it's basically totally people from mainly Middle Eastern countries.
Mm-hmm.
They're befriending their neighbors, opening up doors. We have something called Taco Tuesday where tons of families go out and they have good time, eat and talk and developing relationships. And I just think that we need to be mindful that God has surrounded us with many, many who just have never heard and could hear the gospel, believe, and maybe even go back and be missionaries to their own countries.
Mm-hmm. Garrett, it says in John 15:20, if they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. I know Christians today feel like they're under a lot of microscopic persecutions.
Yeah, and even in this point, like I want to be really clear. I'm not comparing what Christians in America are facing compared to, say, our brothers in Egypt or other places in the Middle East that are under ISIS and all this kind of stuff. But what I am saying is that there's an increasing social pressure and persecution, I would even say, where for to either conform or be conformed or just be ostracized. And I think it's nobody. We should never seek persecution, but when it comes, we should see it as something that the good and wise Father can use to purify us and help us to not cling so tightly to the world and not long for the affirmation and the applause of the world, but rather to seek to please Him. And I think God will use it to make us and make His church all the more radiant before the eyes of the world, mm-hmm. and pleasing to Him.
In your article, Garrett, you talked about how some of this persecution and pressure will expose some so-called Christians as imposters, but for true believers, it will produce maturity. And I think the first mm-hmm. point you made is the world's looking for genuine Christians.
Yeah, cultural Christianity is going away. So I pastored in Texas for 7.5 years, mm-hmm. where it was advantageous for me to be a Christian, especially a pastor. I would walk into a place and they would buy me meals because yeah. I was a pastor.
Wow. Whereabouts in Texas? Do you have any idea?
It was west of Fort Worth, a small town called Graham. It was basically Mayberry. It felt like it was 1950.
Oh, my. And why did you leave that? That sounded like a dream.
it was a lot of sweet things there, but when the Lord says go, you go.
I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
All right, here's another point, Garrett, that you made, which I love. We are closer to seeing Jesus than ever before. The hour has come for you to wake from sleep, for salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. That's Romans 13:11. Say more about that.
Yeah. Brother, it becomes truer every day.
It does, doesn't
it? Every time that promise is read, it's truer than when you quoted it just a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are, it's real. And if that moves our hearts, it truly puts all these other things into place, because the world does grow faintly dim and our heart is renewed to see Him. And it makes us willing to risk to take the gospel to the nations and to endure whatever the Lord would call us, and to be willing to know our time is short. So we should pursue one another in love and reconciliation. And
mm-hmm.
I think if this can grip our hearts, I think it changes everything.
No kidding. I have a C.S. Lewis line in my head, which is, what isn't eternal is eternally out of date. And sometimes I think of the urgency with which we should be living, sharing and taking risks. And is there any little tips you can give listeners? You know, now you took an extra 10 or 15 seconds to ask the question to the pizza delivery woman. And you could have just handed her the money and the generous tip, which I'm sure you would have given her, and just called it a day. But no, you were inquisitive and you asked where she was from. She hemmed and hawed a little bit. Are there any other little tips that you can share with listeners for finding ways to bridge the gap between us and the people who are different from us?
Sure. Yeah, I would encourage you to be spending some time in Colossians 4:2-4, where Paul is commanding the Colossian church to be, you know, praying for open doors and to be watchful. So assume that God is saving people around you, and assume that He wants you to be a part of that. I just think that mindset changes everything, to where people, they're not targets, they're not projects, but we're mindful that God is actually calling the people out. And I just think engage, so put down your phone, you know, and
No. Now you're getting personal.
I know. Now you're getting up in the grill. But it's serious. Like put your phone down, talk to somebody, ask them, say, hey, how's your day? Oftentimes at restaurants, I mean, most normally before we eat our food, we'll ask the waiter or waitress if there's anything that we can pray about for them or their family. Just walk across the street, knock on the door, invite people over for barbecues. It's starting to get springtime again. It's mm-hmm. a good time to invite neighbors over. They're coming out. Just be mindful and pray for God to set up divine appointments and trust
mm-hmm.
His will.
Mm-hmm. Garrett, I'd like to share with our audience what you concluded this article with, which was this: let us not despair or be deceived, but lift our eyes in hope to Him who is coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, and have a great day. I just loved this conversation, and thanks for being a guest.
Yeah, God bless you guys. Thank you for your work up there.
That was Garrett Kell. lead pastor at Delray Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia. He wrote a compelling article on It's a Wonderful Time to Be a Christian, Five Reasons for Optimism in America. You can find that at desiringgod.org. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Minutes after the hour, we're going to take a little news break, and we'll be right back with Todd Mullican. So stay tuned. Thanks for being with us today on Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold here. Be back in a minute. Many Christians believe we are living in dark times. Author and social commentator Oz Guinness agrees, but also believes God can change the world through his church.
Our greatest challenge as believers may come as a surprise. This is Jim Garlow. Paul states in Romans 12, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the," and here we go, "renewing of your mind." Paul goes on to say, "That way you'll be able to test and prove what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." You cannot know God's will unless you have a mind that's been renewed, made new again. In 1 Corinthians 2:6, Paul asks, "But who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him?" He answers his own questions, "But we have the mind of Christ." Renew your mind. Renew your mind so you can have the mind of Christ. Renew your mind so you can think like Christ does and process information like Christ does. What a thought that would be. This is Jim Garlow.
Six minutes after the hour. So glad you joined us today. Hope your day is starting good. You know, sometimes we see things better in our rearview mirror. It's sometimes the best time to look at something. And maybe as winter is winding up, you're looking back and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I was kind of flat again this winter. I was a little depressed, maybe. A little grumpy, maybe a little moody, maybe a little anxious. I kind of lost interest in some stuff. Maybe you've got a little seasonal, what is it called? It's called SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And maybe now you can look back as the weather is getting nicer and the sunshine is happening longer. And we're going to say, I think I might have that. I have on the studio line Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. And Todd, you know all about this, so do share.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Talk Not about feeling depressed.
Oh, no, I'm very happy right now, but I'm on my ninth cup of coffee, so.
Well, you know, that's good to hear. Yeah. With SAD, of course, in my field, we're always changing things, Bill, and we now have seasonal affective disorder is actually a part of major depression. It's a specifier for major depression, and major depression is really a very difficult thing that about 15 to 20% of people in the world will have at some point in their life. It's an episode of depression where there's lots of sadness and feeling overwhelmed and et cetera. So one type of major depression, if you will, is called where it's a seasonal pattern of it. So during the winter when there's less light, when the days are very short, it's just a bit tougher. And so if somebody has a vulnerability to depression, it may be more vulnerable to it during the winter, which, of course, in Minnesota here is forever. But
right. So when now that it's getting to be a little bit nicer and the weather's breaking a little bit, is now a time to have a conversation with someone that you love that might be suffering from that seasonal disorder that you say, you know, let's look back at so how moody you might have been, because you don't want to say it in the middle of the winter because you might get your head taken off.
It's such a wonderful point, because irritability, agitation, the key with – and this, you're right, it's a great time to have a chat and just to have a loving, honest conversation in Christ where you're just saying, here's what I was noticing, but what are you saying? Because you're right, when you're in the episode of depression, things are very noisy. It's there's low energy, there's a lack of interest in activities, very flat affect, as you mentioned earlier, irritability. So I think – it's important to know that if you look back and see, boy, there's an episode of it. Like, I'm always working with clients now that, hey, for next fall, here's some things we can do to help prepare you for a potential next episode that may come next fall, and not because we're hoping it comes, but mm-hmm. if it does, here's a few things we can do. So then we get into more of the preventative mode, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, after the fact, it'd be great just to have a loving conversation about it, because boy, you know, when you're in the middle of it, it's like having the stomach flu. You know, you're in an episode of depression, and you feel like life is over. You mm-hmm. know, but the truth is, it does pass. But boy, in the moment, it's as hard as it gets. So,
you know, Todd, I'm thinking that it may not just be winter either, that these sad episodes can also take mm-hmm. place in the middle of the summer. It can probably hit people at any time. Let's say, for example, you've had episodes with, you know, skin cancer or something, and the doctor says, you cannot go outside in the sun anymore. And people start to go, no, I can't go out. I'm so depressed. Because they remember when there was a lot of freedom to go and do what they wanted.
It's a great point. The seasonal pattern of winter blues, if you will, is just one way that depression comes. It's most of the time it's spurred on by a stressor. So, like you're mentioning there, something that comes into somebody's life. So usually somebody has a vulnerability to it, with some type of a genetic vulnerability. Mom had it, or dad had depression, hopefully treated. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it goes untreated, of course. So usually one or two of the four kids, if you will, might have a vulnerability to it. But then it comes out during a stressful time. So you're right. That stressful time could be a relationship breakup. It could be anything that could make somebody vulnerable to an episode. It could happen any time during the year.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Todd, there's also some rhythmic patterns, circadian rhythms, organic stuff, mm-hmm. where when it's lighter, longer, your body just starts to react differently. I mean, it's easy to go to bed at 7 o'clock in the winter when it's been dark since 4:30, but you're certainly not going to do that in the summertime when it's light up until 10 o'clock, because your rhythms are just so different. You just feel so much better.
That's why the first thing we always say to people when we start just a counseling session is, how are you sleeping? You know, and if somebody has, you know, during the summer when there's so much light, it's usually not as much of a difficult issue. But when one of the things you notice about sleep, Bill, during the winter is that it's okay to sleep a little bit longer. And I talk about ways to treat depression, and one of the ways you do it is to know the uniqueness you have in Christ and how has God made you. So, for example, if you are more of an extroverted person, and you are in a depressive episode, the way you can get through it is a little bit different than you are if you are more of an introverted person.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. Now, Todd, when we talk go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to pick up on your pattern of sleep, sometimes people that are more introverted and reflective and, you know, prefer to have one or two close friends and, you know, not try to do 30 things a day, but just love the rhythm of Sabbath and, you know, longer quiet times with the Lord. And, boy, during that depressive episode, it's okay to just to nap for a few hours and just rest. You know, it shouldn't always be viewed as an escape, but just depression's all about trying to regather your energy. And the way an introvert regathers their energy a lot of time is through reflection, you know, reading a good book, you know, just having a longer quiet time with the Lord, breaking things down with a close friend. Whereas an extrovert who's more active and outgoing and likes to have lots of things going on, the best way that they might navigate through the depression is to try to get on the phone and call a few folks and get out and just try to break through that fog by connectivity and, mm-hmm. and activity. So I think it's important to pray about, you know, Lord, how am I wired? You mm-hmm. know, how have you made me in your image? Because that helps with the navigating through the episodes of depression mm-hmm. that come and go.
Talking to Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. Todd, what about this idea of faking it until you make it? If you're feeling a little bit down and blue, is there any value to the fake it till you make it cliche?
I really think there is, because when the truth is, you know, when you're like, you know, again, using the analogy of the stomach flu, you know, you're going to take it easy a little bit, but you're going to have to eventually have a few crackers, you know, get up, have some water, kind of get going, mm-hmm. you know, and as you get going, your body then, and, you know, you can tell when you're going. pushing too hard, but you're right. You have to kind of plow through a little bit to get going. And as you push through the depression, it does – and I always use the volume idea. How is your depression today? Has it been quieter? Has it been louder? And most of the times when people's depression gets quieter, Bill, it's because they are pushing through. They are – taking the gifts and talents and strengths that the Lord has given them, along with, you know, a good visit to your family doctor or seeing a wonderful Christian counselor, just to kind of slowly nurture yourself through that episode.
Yeah.
So you're right. You got to kind of push through it.
I wish I knew a wonderful Christian counselor. Oh, wait, it's you. Okay. Okay, Todd, the passage in Proverbs that says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And, you know, sometimes I wonder when you have conversations with people and the thing they lead with is, I've been so depressed lately. And I wonder, can you cut your depression in half by just not talking about it so much?
Well, you're right. I think we want to avoid the extremes. You know, if you're always going to, you know, there's a lot of truth to promoting optimism and thinking. You know, Paul, you know, writes from prison. He didn't write from prison. Well, let's take some time to think how depressed life is. Right, you know.
Right.
So he didn't write it from the Taj Mahal. You know, he wrote it from prison. You know, think about whatever is true, whatever is lovely, whatever is of praise. You know, think on these things. Which it doesn't mean the depression just goes away immediately, but there is something to that where we have to steer our minds to the truth that we are loved, accepted, and approved by God, and that, you know, again, that quiets things a little bit. And you're right, if we're always dwelling on what's wrong and the pessimistic view and the negative emotionality, if that's all we're doing, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're right.
Yeah, Todd, I love the word quiet, so we're going to jump to a break right now. But when we come back, I want to talk about how to quiet our fears. Because we all got fears,
okay.
So how do we quiet those? It's 45 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. I'll take a little break and be right back. More with Todd Mulliken. Seven minutes after the hour, I talked about quieting your anxiety down with prayer and spiritual disciplines in the book that I didn't write. So I'm going to let Todd Mulliken from Mulliken Counseling in Edina talk about how to quiet fear down. And I would imagine, Todd, we can do that through prayer and spiritual disciplines.
Oh, boy. The most important first step.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I like the way you said quiet the fear down, because usually what happens is when we have anxiety, which is repressed fear, and it is as common as depression, by the way, if not a little bit more common. So it's a very common issue. That's why Jesus said so often, you know, be not afraid, fear not, be not afraid, fear not. So he knows we battle with that. But yeah, it means that our engine is just running a little bit too fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the restlessness of life, the excessive worry, it just means we're going a little bit too fast. So slowing things down through prayer, through some spiritual practices that we can all have, is a wonderful first step to getting yourself regulated in Christ to then kind of approach what you're anxious about.
Mm-hmm.
So, because usually what happens is when we're anxious, that's when we make our decisions. So I just gave a parenting conference and I had somebody come up to me afterwards and said, I'm not going to let any of my kids drive till they're 18. I said, okay. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, if they start driving when they're 16, there's a 2% likelihood that they might get into an accident by the time they're 18. So, just an example, and again, I understand maybe this person has a lot of excessive worry, or maybe something really bad happened in her family, so I get it, but they're going to make their parenting decisions about driving based on 2% versus 98%, if that makes any sense. So a lot of times we make our decisions based on the worst-case scenario versus what is true. Now, if the truth is your house is on fire, then, you know, call the fire department.
Right.
But most of the time, when we're in excessive worry land, or worst case scenario land, I call it, we're making decisions based on the worst case scenario or our worries or our fears.
Shame on us. I call that awfulizing, where I will create a scenario in the future, which may or may not ever happen, and I treat it as if it was true, and then I insert it into my head today, and that shuts me down.
Oh, I know. It's so easy.
It's just so terrible.
Do.
And God says, my grace is sufficient for you today. Yeah. Why do I not stay in that zone, Todd? What's wrong with me? Fix me, Todd.
Well, you're at the first step, which is great for all of us, is recognizing our vulnerability to fear. Because when we do that, then we can do so the first step is trying to slow the engine down, try to take some deep breaths, have that quiet time, just rest for a minute, try not to make your decision right now, because right now your body's on fire a little bit, mm-hmm. so slow it down, mm-hmm. and then the second step then is try to make your decision on what is true. And that's where, you know, the wonderful thing we have, you know, in Christ is the gift of the Spirit of Truth, the Holy Spirit, who can, you know, bring in truth. And that's when I tell people to get in your mail room and sort out your mail with God. Okay, what is the truth about this decision I'm going to be making?
Mm-hmm.
And let me throw out the lies that come in from Satan or our biology or our family history, wherever the lie is coming from. Catch that lie,
mm-hmm.
and throw it out. And now what is true? The truth is there's a 98% chance my kid who's driving will be fine,
mm-hmm.
because the truth is she is a good driver and she's conscientious. She's passed her driver's test. She's doing well. And there's the truth is she will probably be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of process we want to get into. But it's very hard to do when the worry is so loud, Bill. And that's why we have to try to slow things down first and take some deep breaths and get just a physiological way of managing that worry is through that.
Well, maybe the fear is from the parent that he or she sends 700 text messages a day. And the parents thinking, how are they going to shut that off when they're behind the wheel? And that's a legitimate concern. That's a legitimate concern. Mm. You can say, don't text when you drive, and then let's see the phone and the time you were driving and see if those two are separated.
Absolutely. So, again, what is true? If the truth is the child is irresponsible by texting all the time, then no keys.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We're not driving.
Okay.
So, no, you're absolutely right.
Todd, we're a little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking about the fear that we have in sharing Christ with your neighbor. Okay, let's say I've got generalized fear about stuff in life, and now I've got to add this new fear, which is talking to my neighbor about Jesus, because what I really don't want to do is enrage that person, and then now I got to live with that. So what about that fear? I'm going to be stepping out and taking a risk, and I could be... he might never lend me the power sander again.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what you folks talk about in coming up on your show with that. My two cents would just be is that, again, let's get ourselves regulated first that, okay, the truth is we have no control over how somebody else is going to react, but we do know in that moment we're loved, accepted, and approved by God. And can we just do what I call have more of a relational evangelism where we're breaking bread with that person and just being open and honest about our day and asking them about their day and looking for those opportunities, again, not from fear, obligation, duty, or guilt, mm-hmm. but, you know, from a place of, yeah, you know, I feel loved by God and accepted by God. And, yeah, just in moments I want to be able to share that with somebody, a neighbor of mine who, you know, who I care about. And so I think it's trying to approach it from a place of confidence and contentment and not to be controlled by their reactions, but just to try to have loving volleys with that neighbor and know that even if they do get enraged, that wasn't your intention. And then you will be probably humble in that and say, geez, I didn't mean to enrage you. I'm just sharing with them my mind about this. And you know what I mean? So you can kind of stay in that place of contentment to know that you're okay in Christ, and but somebody else may have a reaction that isn't what you expect.
And
not trying to make that sound easy.
No,
but
it's not easy.
I think it's because it's not. But
yeah.
I think what happens is we just feel this pressure to do this. You know, we feel this obligation to do this versus feeling the freedom that we can do this versus we have to do this.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if we can get that alignment right first, then that hopefully quiets the fears a little bit anyway.
Maybe we need to get outside our idea of self-preservation, where at the end of the day, I most want to self-preserve. So taking a risk with a neighbor, I might lose that, and all of a sudden now the neighbor thinks, you call yourself a Christian? What about the weed problem that's spreading into my yard? And all of a sudden you go, oh, I just, I wish I would have kept my mouth shut.
So true, right? And you know, and obviously there's going to be Pharisees around that are throwing stones, and we can't be controlled by that, but instead just want to outlove them by saying, you know, hey, I'll take care of the weeds. Sorry if that offended you.
Yeah,
you know? And being big enough to own our own side of the street and know it's going to be okay. And these are all just really good things to quiet the fears, quiet the worries. And so I just want to invite people to try to make their decisions based on what is true versus what they're afraid of, so that they can – and that's the way that we can really manage anxiety, is to make our decisions based on what is true versus what's the worst thing that could happen.
I always wondered who lived next door to the Pharisees. Turns out it's Todd Mulliken. Todd Mulliken from Mulliken Counseling in Edina. That's on the web. Thanks so much for being with us today. It's 56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Yep.
It's 57 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. Special hi to all the friends in Waterloo. And if you think, man, we love you in Waterloo. And if you think I say that to every city, well, believe me, I do. So that means Madison, too, and Hartford, and Duluth, and Fargo, and Sioux Falls. Welcome, everybody. Hope you're having a great day. We've got another great hour coming up here on Faith Radio Mornings. Coming up soon, Colin Hansen from the Gospel Coalition. He's going to talk about you can't win the neighbor you fear. So we're going to talk about that, kind of stay on that fear theme. It's a good one because God says, have no fear. So let's believe him. Take a short break and be right back.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.